Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 10, 2018. President Kiir fires two officials at the Bank of South Sudan, but his spokesman says he has not seen any presidential decree.
I have not seen a decree yet, and I cannot talk about speculations. If there is any decree that the president has issued in regards to relief of the governor of Central Bank, it should be read at the SSBC.
And U.S. lawmakers are concerned about a lack of freedoms in South Sudan.
In 2016, the government sent letters to several civil society organizations that are outspoken on policy issues, advising them that they should instead register as political parties.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has fired the governor and the first deputy governor of the Bank of South Sudan. Mr. Kiir issued two presidential decrees removing Othuom Rago Ajak and Diertong Ngor from their posts. A South Sudanese economic analyst says the central bank's governor was likely removed because of his failure to improve the nation's economy. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir's press secretary, Atenwe Kateny, would not confirm the firing of Othuom Rago Ajak, the governor of South Sudan's central bank. Kateny says he's still waiting for information on the firing of the two top officials at the Bank of South Sudan.
I have not seen a decree yet, and I cannot talk about speculations. If there is any decree that the president has issued in regards to relief of the governor of Central Bank, it should be read at the SSBC.
South Sudan in Focus saw a copy of a presidential decree issued last night firing Governor Othuom Rago Ajak and his first deputy, Diertong Ngor. President Kiir issued another decree seen by this program for the appointment of Diertong Ngor as the new governor of the Bank of South Sudan and Albino Dag Othuo as the new first deputy governor. Ahmed Morgan, professor of economics at the University of Juba, says although the sacked governor served only 1 year and 4 months, the president has the power to remove him. He says since the appointment of Ajak, the economy has not improved.
His appointment came with the frustration of the economy when the economy started going bad, and it's expected to improve with the new appointment. But as to our observation, keen observation in the economy, there's nothing that is improving, okay? The financial arrangement in the country is worsening even. If you look at the inflation rate is on the increase.
Morgan says Ajak could have done much more to curb the skyrocketing inflation rate, which devalued the South Sudanese pound.
The governor was appointed, I think, with expectation of making some changes in the economy to improve the economy in terms of monetary policies. A major thing that central bank's governor has to do, at least, to rearrange the currency so that the currency looks good, even if, you know, the inflation is high.
Today, one U.S. dollar is exchanged for 30,000 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Morgan says the new central bank governor has a lot of work to do.
The task is to work with some brilliant economists in this country in order to see what they can do to rearrange the monetary position of the country, not in terms of, you know, earning money for the country, because the work earning money for the country depends on production. The central bank at least have to do some internal arrangement such that we have a better picture of our currency.
Morgan says the central bank should play a key role in managing South Sudan's economic crisis. But in order for the economy to improve in a sustained manner, Morgan says, the leaders must end the war and invest in production. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio, in Juba.
President Kiir's office has called Tuesday's White House statement on South Sudan as, quote, an ill-considered statement, and accuses the U.S. of meddling into the affairs of South Sudan. As Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba, Kiir's office also describes the U.S. statement as subversive and says the U.S. cannot stop the next government in South Sudan from holding elections.
The White House statement condemned the South Sudan government for not doing enough to end the conflict and restore peace and stability. President Kiir's office released a statement calling the U.S. review of South Sudan assistance direct interference with the internal affairs of the Republic of South Sudan. Attorney Wek Attorney is President Kiir's spokesman.
We think United States of America should give itself time to understand the real problem in South Sudan instead of just pointing fingers at the government and run out of patience against government alone, you know, without knowing that, you know, the intransigency that is stuck on the mind of the opposition is simply because they see the United States of America like is standing with them. When he will fight the government without mentioning the opposition.
The Kiir administration says the White House has killed the peace efforts in South Sudan because the White House statement places all the blame on the government, leaving the opposition with no incentive to pursue peaceful means in ending the conflict. According to President Kiir's office, quote, it is now clear to the entire world that it is the U.S. that is bent on obstructing the peace process in South Sudan, end of quote. Again, Attorney Wek Attorney.
The opposition are supposed to be asked or pressurized to accept a peace agreement. We are also disappointed that the United States of America is talking about the government the people of South Sudan deserved.
Attorney says the U.S. has no authority to tell Juba how to manage its internal affairs. The UK and Norway also released statements criticizing South Sudan government leaders for not doing enough to restore peace. The South Sudan Opposition Alliance, including the SPLM-IO led by Riek Machar, have widely welcomed the White House statement, which says the U.S. is considering ending funding for the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission in its implementation of the 2015 peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The human rights records of Sudan and South Sudan were under scrutiny yesterday by lawmakers here in Washington. The lobbyists in Washington asked lawmakers to put pressure on repressive governments in sub-Saharan Africa, as Ayen Bior reports.
In sub-Saharan Africa, there are at least 38 restrictive initiatives on faith-based groups and civil society groups in 19 countries. Sudan is among them, according to panelist Emerson Sykes, a legal advisor at the Africa International Center.
A 2013 policy explicitly limited foreign funding to humanitarian projects, prohibiting international support for human rights, environmental advocacy, or even economic development. Given that local funding for independent civil society groups is virtually non-existent, restrictions on foreign funding significantly impede the viability of these groups.
Sykes told lawmakers that under Sudan's so-called Voluntary and Humanitarian Work Act of 2006, a law which regulates organizations, many organizations have been restricted in their activities. Under the law, organizations must receive prior approval from the government before they can receive foreign funding. Panelist Stephen Harris, a policy director at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, also told lawmakers yesterday that Sudan's human rights record and its track record on religious freedom is poor.
In February of this year, it was reported that an evangelical church building in Khartoum was demolished on the charge of public disturbances. However, reports indicate that the land itself is desired for Muslim business interests. The 29-year-old church building belonged to the Sudan Presbyterian Evangelical Church and was one of 27 churches that the Sudanese government indicated would soon be demolished because of similar charges.
President Omar al-Bashir and the National Congress Party have been in power since 1989. Harris says the administration has shown signs of oppression and government attacks on civilians is the norm. Sudan's communication minister, Ahmed Bilal, could not be immediately reached for comment. Sykes says the climate in South Sudan on human rights and civil society organizations is not much better.
In South Sudan, advocacy is not among the permissible objectives of civil society organizations, making it unclear what rules apply to organizations involved in advocacy activities. The government has broad authority to deny registration if an organization is involved in, quote, tribal and political differences in the country.
South Sudan's government uses legal maneuvers to keep civil society in check, according to Sykes.
In 2016, the government sent letters to several civil society organizations that are outspoken on policy issues, advising them that they should instead register as political parties. This type of enforcement action can have a chilling effect, discouraging organizations from participating in policy-making processes.
South Sudanese government officials have repeatedly said freedom of speech and expression is not restricted in their country. Civil society and faith-based groups are included in the peace process, a fact that politicians point to as evidence. But despite that, some have complained that there are limits to free speech. The panelists urge members of Congress to take religious and civil society matters seriously in sub-Saharan African countries. For example, Sykes says, the United States contributes very little to advance civil society legal reforms, and he says funding could help ensure basic human rights in many sub-Saharan countries. Ayan Dangbior, VOA News, Washington.
A top UN official in South Sudan says he thinks women should be given a greater role in trying to end the conflict and restore peace in the country. The head of UN mission in South Sudan, David Shearer, says women are determined, strong and passionate and can be good peacemakers if given a chance. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
One people, one nation contains a peaceful message. And so women can act as peace preachers and peace lovers right from the midst of their families and then little by little to the countrywide.
15-year-old Gladys Ame Corlinos talks about her winning essay, One Nation, One People, in a nationwide secondary school writing competition during an award ceremony attended by UN government officials and students in Juba yesterday. More than 100 secondary school students from across the country took part in the month-long essay writing competition sponsored by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. Gladys, a senior 2 student at Don Bosco Secondary School in Juba, says her essay focused on creating more local women associations.
I wrote this because peace is first within and then later on it will reach the others. So I wrote the local associations that women should form local associations in order to reach the other women who don't have the chance to contribute in the political, social and economic issues affecting their countries.
Gladys says, although she is delighted to win the competition, she would be happier if her ideas were given serious consideration by the nation's leaders.
They should not leave women behind because women have that heart and they have that mind of intelligence whereby they tend to solve problems easily and smoothly.
And Ms. Chief, David Shearer, agrees.
A number of years ago, I was in Liberia. And when I was in Liberia, there was a war happening. There was conflict going on. Nobody believed that there would ever be an end to the conflict in Liberia. But slowly and surely, things got better. And I want to tell you that the secret ingredient that was made the difference. It was women who played a part. These were ordinary women who played a part in the peace talks. After a peace deal was signed, the first president after that was a woman, and she helped take the Liberia from a path of war through to a path of peace.
South Sudan Education Minister Deng Deng Oj says the government realizes the positive role women play in government.
The role of women in peacemaking and in sustaining peace is a traditional role. It is a historic role. It is a permanent role. And therefore, it is a role that we need to support.
Out of 383 members in the National Assembly, 109 are females. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at an outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today: What is the biggest problem facing your country's leaders?
Their lack of commitment, you know, commitment in the sense to solving or addressing the issues affecting the country's development. So, you know, if they are committed, they will be able to solve, to identify certain problems and solve those problems appropriately.
I think the very first is policy somersault and the lack of vision.
Leaders do not have programs for the country. Leaders, they don't put country as a priority. So that's why leaders are not willing to help or to come up with the programs that can at least put resources in the hands of the citizens.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Health officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo are racing to contain an Ebola outbreak identified this week. At least two people are confirmed to have died of the virus in a remote village of northwestern DRC, very close to the border of the Republic of Congo. Health experts caution against panic, pointing to DRC's strong track record in recent years in containing Ebola outbreaks. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
The nation's health minister, Dr. Olialunga, has been keeping people updated on social media, tweeting that on Thursday, some 24 hours after the initial announcement of the outbreak, a team of 12 experts landed in Mandaka, the city closest to the outbreak. Earlier this week, he said Ebola had been confirmed in 2 of 17 hemorrhagic fever deaths seen in recent weeks in the northwest village of Bikoro. The World Health Organization has released $1 million from its emergency fund to respond to this outbreak. WHO and Doctors Without Borders are leading the response and have sent experts to the site. Medical group Doctors Without Borders told VOA its experts are also in Bikoro. This is not Congo's first encounter with the hemorrhagic fever, which causes an acute, serious illness which is often fatal if untreated. The virus derives its name from the place it was first discovered, the Ebola River, a tributary of the Congo River, in 1976. The average survival rate is 50%, according to the World Health Organization. Spokesman Tarek Yasarevic.
Last year there was an Ebola outbreak in part of DRC as well that was contained relatively quickly. So we are hoping to do the same thing this time around, to send quickly teams to the area where the virus has been confirmed to be circulating, to be in position to identify those who are sick, to be in position to identify those who have been potentially exposed, and to put in place all those necessary measures that are used every time when there is an Ebola outbreak, so we can try to stop the transmission as fast as possible.
This latest outbreak happened in an area near the banks of the Congo River. Because this region is poor in infrastructure, its many waterways are vital for transport and trade activities. Ebola killed more than 11,000 people in a two-year outbreak that ravaged Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia between 2014 and 2016. So far, none of the recent outbreaks in Congo have been connected to that event. Yasarevic noted that locals also have an important role to play.
It is really important that the community in this particular area is engaged, is working together with authorities in terms of safe burial practices, in terms of proper contact tracing, to be compliant with those procedures. The community engagement has been proven as a key component of successful containment of Ebola outbreak.
The virus is transmitted to people from wild animals and is spread person to person through direct contact with bodily fluids, including but not limited to blood, sweat, saliva, breast milk, and tears. Anita Paul, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The death toll from Kenya's torrential rains has jumped to nearly 200 after a dam burst in western part of the country, sweeping away at least two villages. Weeks of heavy rains overwhelmed the dam last night. News reports say anywhere from 30 to 50 people died when the water swamped their homes and farms. VOA's Daniel Schaff is in Nairobi. He tells my colleague Paul Alexander about the latest destruction from the heavy flooding.
The reason for the difference in all of the numbers is, of course, because more information is coming in slowly and are still continuing to conduct rescue efforts. This is an area that was completely inundated for about 2 kilometers in a pretty huge area completely swamped when this dam burst its banks. Schools have been completely wiped out. Businesses have been damaged. There's about 2,000 people estimated to be affected by, displaced by the flooding that took place in the last 24 hours or so here. So it's quite a serious situation.
Now, I understand that this was a private dam. Are there suggestions that that may have played a role, and are there a lot of these types of dams around?
That's right. It was a private dam that burst its banks, an earthen dam, meaning that it was not, made out of concrete or something more stable. Apparently, this was one of a few dams by a private farmer, Mr. Patel, and it was used in irrigation and fish farming. And the torrential rains that we've been having here the last couple of months, really, in East Africa, really just swelled a lot of the rivers, and of course dams filled up, and so there was a lot of flooding that was taking place. And for something like that, a dam that doesn't have real solid concrete infrastructures behind it, it was somewhat inevitable that it was going to crack and burst under this kind of pressure. Now, there are, according to local media, engineers that have been sent to examine and test at least 3 other dams that are in that same area, including some others that are owned by Mr. Patel. So there are concerns that if those dams are not structurally sound, that further rain could burst those as well and make this terrible situation even worse.
Can you give us an overall situation in the country with the rains and the flooding and what the forecast is?
Well, with the death toll from this tragedy last night, there's been, we're getting up close to 200 people that have been killed now in Kenya alone from floods, from these, really heavy rains that we've been having the last couple of months. And there's about 250,000 Kenyans have been displaced because of the flooding. And throughout East Africa, there's been some really heavy rains for this season. Somalia had, another 100,000 or so people who were displaced from their homes from flooding, 500,000 who were affected by the rains and flooding. And then in Uganda, Ethiopia. So it's a regional weather pattern that has really struck East Africa. And flooding is not uncommon in this part of the world and this time of year. But we also have had severe droughts last year, so it's fairly extreme weather that's been hitting the area. And unfortunately, because of some of the poor infrastructure, some of the poor engineering, and dams like the one that we saw burst last night, there has been this really heavy death toll.
That's VOA's Daniel Schaff speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander earlier today from Nairobi. Facing social and legal hardship when she tried to end her marriage, an Egyptian woman decided to launch an online radio program to help others going through the same experience. 8 years later, the program continues to generate good advice. Mariama Diallo reports.
Mahassen Sabur, founder and host of Radio Divorces, points out she created the platform to help other women who face the same difficulties she did.
We try to rehabilitate the divorced woman. We try to rebuild her psychologically and within society by telling them about what's available, including government services, such as the National Council for Women and Child Centers.
She launched the online program 8 years ago to challenge the social stigma associated with divorce in Egypt.
From my experience and readings, I know a woman has the legitimate religious right to get a divorce. The problem is not about divorce itself, it's about what happens after divorce.
But not everyone is thrilled about the show. On the streets of the Egyptian capital, one resident says the program encourages women to seek divorce even after a small dispute.
When you see a woman who is liberated,
and calls for divorce and how beautiful it is and praises living without a husband, this deepens the wound of Arab families. We do not want to reach that level.
But another woman who went through a divorce defends the program's relevance.
Women are not only half the society, women are the entire society. She raises the minister, police officer, engineer, and the president. If she is psychologically stable and lives well, she will raise better generations.
Despite limited resources, about 3 dozen volunteers provide technical assistance to the nonprofit forum. Sabr's co-host Mai Ali says the program caters to the needs of other people as well.
It is concerned with the whole family, how to raise your child, and even for single women, we provide advice on how to choose your life partner and how we can be more positive in our life.
The program is also timely. The divorce rate is said to be rising in Egypt with nearly 200,000 cases in 2016, a 10% increase from 2015, according to the country's Central Agency for Public Mobilization and Statistics. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
That story by Mariama Diallo brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Mamoria by JJD Muzika.
Evangelio and Mamoria. Seika. Maluje de.
Habibi, isimu seida. Isimu sukeli wa usajemi. Hiya jamani nigeni.
We have been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Mamoria. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Demakwes.